Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Welcome back to the final hour of Lords of the Zings, Cakes and Danny, episode 4, A New Hope. The 2 o'clock hour is actually pretty packed. We'll be joined by Pete Haley in just a second. I'm going to take an 80s, 90s TV quiz that Danny will administer, and we're going to do winning off the field.
Wow.
I've got a winning off the field.
Wow.
That I would like to share, and I'm sure Danny can find one, and if people would like to join in, 800-636-1067. We'll take your little small victories in life. Winning off the field, we'll do that around 240, 245. But right now, we're joined by Pete Haley from NBC Sports Washington. He covers the Redskins. He podcasts. He golfs. He's like a Renaissance man. He does many things. He gambles. It's Pete Haley. What's up, Pete?
Hey, guys. That is the first time I've ever been described as a Renaissance man. I'm rarely even described as a man, period. So I take that, and I appreciate that very much.
You'll take that as a compliment. And one of the things you do that you like to do, I know you like to go to MGM National Harbor. Check your watch right now, Mr. Haley. I believe we are, 10. We're 16 hours from the reopening of MGM National Harbor, 6 a.m. tomorrow morning. Will you be there for the grand reopening of MGM National Harbor, Mr. Haley?
Well, sorry, I couldn't really hear your question because Angels started singing on the phone. I don't know if you guys heard that. But the problem with this, I'm in a bind, and she's listening right now because I told her to listen. My girlfriend has, like, kind of a blood condition, blood disorder that would make it very complicated on her if she were to get corona.
Okay.
So I told her that MGM is opening, and she said, well, you shouldn't go because of my condition, or else you'd have to quarantine yourself for 2 weeks after you went, kind of. And I said, okay, yeah, so I guess I'll see you in a couple weeks then when it opens on Monday.
So there's the trade-off,
I need to go. It smells good. It's so fun in there. I miss giving my money to the nice people at MGM National Harbor. So I hope to be there soon once we get her situation figured out. And I'm sorry, Kim, in advance if you heard that.
Kim, I'm sorry too, but I kind of want Pete to go. Pete, this is like one part shtick, one part real, and then like another part shtick also for the recipe. Are the Redskins going to sign Antonio Brown?
So I am really amazed by the support of fans for this idea. I mean, I tweeted out a video a couple days ago of him and Haskins. I guess it was yesterday. With them throwing in the dark, I just kind of stole it off Instagram. I wasn't there. I don't want anyone to get that idea. But when I tweeted it, it went crazy because anything Haskins, AB will go crazy. And I have to say, 90% of fans are tagging the Redskins, tagging Ron Rivera, saying, sign AB, sign AB. And I'm thinking, yes, I'm sure he can be very good and help the offense, but he's a legit lunatic who has just ruined the past couple teams he's been on, and we're so excited about what Ron's building and the kind of serious culture he has, and you want to bring in Antonio Brown just to eke out another win or two this season? I don't think it's going to happen. I think they're just workout buddies, and they're having fun in June and July as they throw passes to each other. And I also think Ron kind of dismissed it a couple weeks ago. We asked him on a Zoom call, and he said, look, I want to see these young receivers grow. And he didn't even mention the off-field stuff. That was kind of his way of just brushing it aside. But he didn't even have to mention the off-field stuff. Antonio Brown's crazy. I don't think they're going to sign him. I think he'll go somewhere like Seattle or Baltimore and let them take the risk while the Redskins kind of roll with McLaurin, Sims, and Harmon and all those guys.
Pete, I am generally with you for the last few months, weeks. Anytime Antonio Brown to the Skins has come up, I've basically said, you know, Ron Rivera's running a tight ship. We've seen what he's done with Quentin Dunbar, you know, with guys that don't want to be here or guys that are just weird and don't really buy into the team concept. But like 2% of me is starting to think, well, Haskins is working out with him a lot. He would bring a lot to the offense. And it would be, I would assume, Rivera would sit him down before he were ever, you know, even close to a contract and say, look, You've been an idiot in the past. None of that is going to fly here. But you would be able to help out our young quarterback on offense. But if you act up even once, and I mean just do anything, if you get a parking ticket, you're going to be, you know, you're going to be off the team. Like, a little part of me is softening to him possibly showing up here.
Well, I don't think I'm softening. You said you're 98%, 2%. I'm still probably 100 and 0, but I see your point. But I just go back to, he was the Patriots. He was with Bill Belichick. That's right. The most structured program ever, and he lasted, I think, 10 or 11 days, and he was gone. Yes, I trust Ron. I trust his character judgment, and if he brought Antonio Brown in, clearly they would do a lot of vetting. I mean, they talked about the vetting process they went through with Sadiq Charles, their fourth-round left tackle. I'm sure they would do that times 10 if they were to bring in Brown to this new era of Redskins football. And I know he would help this offense. If you ever want your eyes to fall out of your head, just go to his Pro Football Reference page and look what he did for the six-year run in Pittsburgh, where he had, like, 1,300 yards was his worst season. I mean, he would instantly upgrade this team, but I just don't know if the risk and the headaches are worth, you know. I mean, even if Antonio does come here, I'm expecting a big step from Dwayne. I'm expecting this team to be better, but I'm not thinking they're going to go from, you know, a 9-7 to an 11-5. I think maybe they go from 6-10 to 7-9, 8-8. I just don't know if all of that is worth it. Maybe in a couple years, if they were considering this, I would say yes, if they're doing this rebuild properly, but I don't know if you want to do it right at the beginning.
Well, Pete, the reason I think that it's that people would are at least warm to the idea or even kind of excited about it is because a fourth rounder out of a college football program where they're playing against UMe and Cakes is our best option at the receiver opposite Terry McLaurin, or Kelvin Harmon, who's got slightly more upside than my athletically challenged six-year-old. I mean, their receiver position stinks. There's no help for Dwayne Haskins. Their tight end position's terrible. We're hoping like a third-round running back out of Memphis is an option out of the backfield. The left side of the O-line is in flux. He's not in a good situation learning his fourth offense in 4 years with not much protection, not many weapons. Other than that, how was the play, Mrs. Lincoln? That's why people are warm to it. I'm not excited about it either, because we know he's a crazy pants, and counting on crazy pants is dangerous, especially when you're this fragile like the Redskins are. But that's why people are open to it, is because they've done nothing to provide Haskins with a chance, in my opinion.
Yeah, this would all be so much simpler if Amari Cooper just accepted the giant bag of money Ron Rivera was trying to hand to him at the beginning of the offseason, because it's the Antonio Brown production with none of the issues. Like, that would have been fine. But I'm with you, Danny. Like, I'm writing stories for NBC Sports Washington these days where I'm using words like a subtle, nice move when they brought in Logan Thomas and J.D. McKissick. And I just kind of look at my screen. I'm like, am I really trying to talk myself into J.D. McKissick being a good addition? Like, this offense is in very dire circumstances, I know. I maybe view Kelvin Harmon and Antonio Gandy-Goldman, Antonio Gibson and Steven Sims in a little bit better light than you do. Everybody understands that Terry McLaurin is a superstar and he's the best and he's just a total gift to this team. I think the rest of those guys could be a little bit better. But, yeah, I just think we're looking at a really lean offensive year for them, and then hopefully next year is when they kind of turn the attention to the offense, because hopefully we'll see that this defense is really good in 2020.
Pete, I just can't make sense of the running back room at this point. We've touched on some of the names. I mean, you've got Geis. We don't know whether he's going to be in there for 15 games or for two. You've got Adrian Peterson, who's claiming he wants to play another 4 years. You know, you've got Antonio Gibson, who comes in. You're not sure whether he's a running back or a wideout. I think he's a weapon that Scott Turner is going to figure out the best way to use. You've got Peyton Barber. I mean, there's a lot of moving parts in the running back room. Do you see anybody like being head and shoulders above anybody else in that room at this point?
I understand that it looks like it's a lot, but I kind of think it's going to be one of these battles where we just talk about it for the next couple of months, and then it's pretty predictable what happens in the end. I think they'll keep four. I think it's going to be Peterson, Geis, McKissick, and Gibson. I don't know if Bryce Love is even healthy enough to be in this battle, and if he is, he's a previous pick from a previous regime. The Redskins will have no ties to him, really, so I don't think he has much of a chance. And I think Peyton Barber is just insurance there in case Geis gets hurt or something. But I think I heard you guys on the Junkies earlier this week talking about who's going to get the most carries, and I think it's going to be Peterson again overall. Just, I cannot trust Darius Geis to string together 15 games, much less, you know, I can't trust him really to get through a month of football right now. And it's a shame, because what he did in Carolina last year was just absurd. He looked like the feature back of the future. But then a couple weeks later, he's back on IR. He has more IR trips than touchdowns. Or actually, I think it's 3-3. He's tied IR trips and touchdowns. So I just don't know if he's going to really factor in. So I think you're looking at Peterson again for another season and four more if he gets his way, and then McKissick as a third down back. And I think Gibson is going to be more – he might line up in the backfield a good amount, but I think he's going to end up with more catches than rushes. That's what happened at Memphis last year, and that's what I see from him. So I think Ron said we're going to have a lot of options. We may not have one guy who can do it all, but we're going to have a lot of guys who can help out. So it's going to be a big-time committee. Don't draft any of these people on your fantasy football teams in the next couple months because it's going to be a mess, but it might be a good
– I'm in no danger of that.
If I'm in a 40-team league, I may start considering some of those guys.
Non-PPR, whatever.
You're in some weird leagues, Cakes. I don't know. I thought you were in a 40-team league.
When I'm in an NFC East only league, I will start considering those guys.
Yeah. NFC East running back only league. I might have one roster.
Correct.
Only maybe.
I know. Pete Haley with us here on Lord of the Zings, episode 4, A New Hope. Let's get into this. I'm public enemy number one for a lot of Redskins fans because I just happen to think Chase Young is good. And I hate words like generational. I think it's stupid. Generational means once a generation. That's almost 30 years. That means if he's not the defensive rookie of the year and this isn't a top five defense, you were wrong and I was right. Anyway, my point all along has been I think he's good. I think he's going to be good, and that's awesome. I'm glad that he's here. But that was already the best unit on the team. And I don't know how significant the return is going to be. You're also, when you have four first-rounders in 4 years, plus Ryan Kerrigan, who was a first-rounder, still productive potentially in his own right, and Matt Ioannidis in that mix, you're going to marginalize somebody in that group. They're going to lose some reps. So to me, I wasn't as excited as everybody else who's throwing a parade for Chase Young. Who's the odd man out here, in your opinion? Or are there going to be multiple odd men out, Pete, when it starts to come to that defensive line rotation? Because Chase Young's going to play. We know that. Who's going to lose out?
I think it's going to be Ryan Kerrigan. I think he's going to be third behind Young and Sweat there on the edge. I think he'll still be featured, but I think he's going to lose out. And I kind of got the sense from talking to him on Zoom when we did that a couple weeks ago. I mean, Ryan is the most polite person ever. So whenever we've talked to him the past couple years, it's been, hey, Ryan, how good is Preston Smith? Hey, Ryan, how good is Montez Sweat? Hey, Ryan, how good is Chase Young? And we never really ask, hey, Ryan, how good are you? Let's talk about you. And this time we were kind of doing that whole bit, and I could tell, I think Kerrigan was kind of getting pissed, like, look, guys, I'm about to break the franchise sack record. I'm still a very valuable defender, and all you want to do is talk about other people. But I think he might be kind of third in the mix here with Chase arriving. And in terms of the defensive line itself, I get it. It is a little bit crowded, but one thing I've kind of been picking up on is they seem to be really, really high on Daron Payne. Rivera kind of reviewed all these frontline guys and said, yeah, Daron was the only one who kind of played good last year. I think you could get a lot more out of him. So look for Daron Payne to thrive. Yeah, I'm not just saying Chase Young is good. I'm going to take it a step further. I think he's going to be excellent. I'm not going to say generational because I'm with you. That word is stupid and should be scrubbed from every person who's ever said it. Just stop saying that word. It's useless. But I think it was the right pick. I think it was a good pick. And I think after Chase Young goes like 10 Pro Bowls, maybe we can play some of your clips back, Danny, and just kind of laugh at it, hopefully.
No problem.
Pete, do you think Montez Sweat makes the leap in year two? Started a little bit slow, wound up with 7 sacks on the season. With other guys in the mix now, Chase Young primarily, is he a guy who's going to jump to double-digit sacks in year two?
Yeah, I think on our podcast we set the over-under 1 point at 9.5, so will Montez get double digits or not? And I think I would go slightly under. I think he's going to be really useful, and I think you're right. The second half, it was – he had 1.5 sacks in the first 8 games, and he had 5.5 in the next 8. So something kind of clicked for him. I mean, the guy's a freak. He's really gifted. He looks the part, obviously. Super explosive, and I think he's going to benefit from all the attention that happens with Chase. I mean, I think the problem kind of with Danny's point where they said they just strengthened one of their better units already. So, like, all of these guys could break out, but last year the Redskins were 10th in sacks. And what did that get them? They got them a 3-13 record. So, like, this team may finish 3rd or 4th in sacks. You may see double digits from Chase. You might see 9 from Kerrigan and Sweat and a bunch from the guys in the middle. But you need to actually have that correlate to better play overall. So where all these players need to be better is on third down, because it doesn't matter if you get a sack on 2nd and 10 and then it's 3rd and 18 and Sam Darnold finds Ryan Griffin for a 50-yarder touchdown in FedEx Field and everybody's upset. So sacks or not, I don't know, they just all need to be better on third down collectively, and that goes for the coverage too.
So let's get to that coverage, because that's, again, I think they shored up a nice part of the dam that was already pretty good, and there are gaping holes, not like finger plug holes, but gaping holes on the rest of the defensive side of the ball, and on the offensive side of the ball, but everybody wants to pat themselves on the back for Chase Young. Where are you most worried about them on defense? Is it linebacker? Is it corner? Is it safety? Where do you have the least confidence?
I think my least confidence, I'd probably say linebackers, and I know a lot of people would look at the cornerback group and say it's Kendall Fuller and then a bunch of veterans on one-year deals. Why aren't you saying corner? Linebacker worries me because I just don't think they have any speed. I think this is going to be a year where you see running backs in San Francisco and Pittsburgh just take advantage of these guys besides Cole Holcomb. Thomas Davis can't really run sideline to sideline anymore. I think John Bostic would be the perfect linebacker if you were in 2004, but we're in 2020, you need more modern players. So I'm scared about linebacker, and I know guys will say, oh, they're playing behind this D-line, their jobs are going to be so much easier. But at some point, you know, John Bostic's going to be isolated against Zach Ertz, and he's going to have to run with him and cover him, and I just don't have enough faith in him and Thomas Davis to get that job done. I'm excited about Cole Holcomb, but the rest of the linebackers have me a little bit nervous.
Pete, thank you so much for the time. We appreciate you showing up on Lords of the Zings. Props to Millie the cat at your house. She's doing something that Funny Danny is not doing this weekend, watching the Travelers on CBS, watching some golf.
Well, I will say this. Before this call, I did something that I'm pretty confident neither of you will ever do again in your life.
Okay.
And if I know Danny, I'm pretty sure it may be something he's never done in his life, period. Do you guys want to take a guess at what that is? So I gave $7.50 into a little machine, and it dispensed 63 golf balls. And then I stood on a green square in the blazing sun, and I hit those balls just straight ahead, various levels of success and distance. And then I packed up my clubs, and I got in the car. And that's what I did. Danny, have you ever gone to a driving range?
Hundreds of times.
Hundreds?
And the upset
wow.
of the century,
that
yes,
is awesome.
I have.
Way.
Because that
that's
is so fun.
Times.
It's so fun. Yeah. It is a really fun thing to do. Now, it's a recreational activity and should never be on television, that action. But, yes, it is super fun. I've been down to Haynes Point. I got, like, a frequent customer card. I used to go every day when I had a meaningless job during, like, the spring and summertime when it was golf and weather.
Like
I don't know.
Danny.
I can't remember how much
know,
it cost.
Just peeling back layers of the onion here, Pete.
Yes. Whacking the golf ball. Whacking away. So much fun. So much fun.
Yeah. Because everybody says whacking away. Yep, that's definitely the right terminology.
That's what it is, right? And then how you doing? And hacking and whacking. It's a wee Scottish game. I don't know. I think it fits.
I think it works. Pete, thanks so much for the time.
Thanks,
it's Pete Haley from NBC Sports Washington. Give him a follow right now on the Twitter, at Pete Haley NBCS. We're going to pivot when we come back. Danny is going to administer an 80s and 90s TV quiz. I'm a little bit worried about it. I might need to go down the wormhole and do some cramming during the break, try to figure it out. So we'll do that next here on 106.7 The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.
Bye.
All right, Johnny Cakes, you ready for this?
I think I'm ready. We're going to do an 80s, 90s TV quiz. I'm a little worried.
You a little nervous?
Yeah.
You a little nervous?
Just
a little nervous? If you play along at home, tweet me your answers. I'm at Funny Danny. Cakes is at Money Metal Cakes. A must follow on the Twitterverse as it is. All right, so we are ready for your questions, my friend. I'll give you guys an idea. These are all questions that I already knew. These are fish in a barrel. These are layups. These range from things that everybody should know to it's pathetic that you know them. But that's where I am, somewhere in that range in my life. Roseanne and Dan Connor. Show Roseanne. Where do they live?
Ooh. Do you need a city or a state?
Little of both, because you should know it.
You need both?
Both of them.
Ooh. All right, I'm going to write this
down.
Did
you even watch this show, bro?
I mean, I'll be honest. I watched Roseanne. Wasn't a big consumer.
Roseanne got mad while you're Christian pondering this. Roseanne got mad at the network at one point. This is before they came back, and then she got herself fired, and the whole thing was a mess. But she got mad, so they came up with this entire arc, one of the last seasons, where the Connors was supposed to be this struggling family of Americana, kind of like a real-life version of The Simpsons, where they dealt with gritty stuff and not having enough and whatever, where they won the lottery, and it just jumped the shark. He was doing pirouettes over the shark. It was so bad. But when it was the silliest was when Roseanne had the job at the diner. Then they broke out and opened up the Lanford Lunchbox where they serve loose meat sandwiches. Okay. The whole thing was great. It was a great show.
I have my answer.
Show me.
I'm sure it's wrong.
Chicago is not right. Illinois is correct. Yeah. Lanford, Illinois. Oh. Casey, Lanford, Illinois.
See, I knew it was Illinois. I was pretty sure it wasn't Chicago. But, I mean, what other sort of answer am I going to put? Like Champaign or Rockford? What am I going to put down?
Silly
is that
Rockford
even a real
pinches.
City or is that a made-up city?
I actually think it's a real city. I could be
Lanford,
wrong about
Illinois is a real
Lanford,
place.
I think Lanford, Illinois is a real city. Yeah, I think it is.
Hmm.
But I don't know that.
I will have to take your word for it.
Alf, alien life form. Hey, Willie! Ha! It's from the planet Melmac. His real name is Gordon Shumway. He played Booyah Baseball, as you know. What you may not know.
I didn't know a lot of what you just said.
The family name, also in addition to Full House, were the Tanners. Willie Tanner and Company.
Okay.
What was the name of the family that lived next door? The nosy neighbors that lived next door.
Are you serious?
I'm very serious.
You want the name of the family that lived next door to Alf and his family?
That's right. I want that. Bring me that. What do you have?
Man, these are some ball busters.
Yeah. If you watch the show, you know. If you didn't watch the show, this will be really hard.
I mean, I didn't really watch a lot of Alf. I've got to be honest with you.
You didn't watch Alf? Trevor and Raquel were the first names of this. The ultimate nosy neighbor.
Ultimate Liz Sheridan. Nosy neighbor. All right. I'm just going to go with just a really common name. And I hope that I hit on it.
It's not common. I'll tell you that right now.
Well,
so
this is clearly wrong. The Tom Wilsons.
I'm sure they're the Wilsons.
Live next door.
Guy, I'm sure. The mom would go on to play Jerry Seinfeld's mom on Seinfeld.
Okay.
Great actress. The Achmonics. Looking for the Achmonics kicks. Come on.
Their last name is Achmonic?
Achmonic.
The Achmonics.
The Achmonics.
You didn't just make that up just now.
Hand to God. The Achmonics.
The Achmonics.
Trevor and Raquel.
Sounds like a bad, like, 80s Euro synth band.
A great and underrated television program. Mr. Belvedere took place in the 1980s. I believe it went into the early 90s.
You're bringing up basically all the TV shows I did not watch in the 80s and 90s. But that's fine. That works.
Say again, what were you doing?
Yeah.
Lynn Belvedere comes to the Owens family, and it's very important. The Owens family, we realize, needs him.
Don't forget about Billy Owens. Played at Syracuse. He was
one of the great high school players of all time, yes. Billy Owens. What are the names of the kids on Mr. Belvedere?
First of all, how many are there, and how many are boys, and how many are girls?
Two boys and a girl. Two boys and a girl. The girl was teenage, and one of the running plots was that she was a little bit loose morally. Yep.
She was a bit of a, how should I put this gently, a harlot?
Yes.
Maybe.
She was a Kevin Harlot, I would say.
All right, two boys. All right, so the two boys' names are, let's see. I'm writing this down. Two boys' names.
See if anybody's getting these on Twitter.
All right. Let's see. I have the boys' names. And let me think of a morally loose girl, like stripper type name. I'm going to go. All right, here we go.
All right, what do you
got,
Casey?
I have the names. The boys' names were Chad and Terry.
Terry's interesting. Terry's interesting for the youngest boy in the family.
And the girl's name,
Amber.
I'm going to go with
Welcome to the
Amber.
Stage, Amber, everybody. No, we're looking for Kevin, the oldest, Heather, and Wesley. Kevin was fashioned after Kirk Cameron, sort of the oldest womanizing kind of playboy. Sort of style. Heather, very different, though, than counterpart on.
Apparently, I did not pay a lot of attention to 80s and 90s television because I am just flailing up here. I'm just swinging at all sorts of junk.
Did you even watch television, bro? That's my follow-up question here.
Apparently,
all right, let's go to this.
No.
Let's go to this. Here we go. I want to know, what were the jobs, the professions of our parents on Growing Pains? What were the jobs of the parents?
Oh, the parents on Growing Pains. Mm-hmm. All right. All right. That's Alan Thick, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Alan Thick, all right, I'm writing this down. He was like, all right, counselor.
I'll accept that. He was a psychiatrist.
Okay. All
and
right.
And Maggie Malone was a TV reporter, Kixie.
Well, I never would have gotten that.
I know. We've got a. Let's do a couple more. We actually have some breaking news that we got to get to.
Okay.
We'll have to do it for the rest of the program. So let me just do a couple more super quickly with you. Okay. Give me the fictional guest star on Saved by the Bell, the name of the fictional guest star in the No Hope with Dope episode. The students were to film a PSA. They were cast in a commercial with this fictional actor who, it turns out, smoked dope.
How would I have been? I have no file on Saved by the Bell. Never watched an episode.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Looking for Johnny Dakota there, Kixie. Johnny Dakota.
Johnny Flakes Dakota.
I think you might get this one. The name of the bar / restaurant in Hazard County where Daisy worked.
Oh, this now. See, now you're in my
You got one?
House.
You got
I
one?
I got this. I think I got this one, Danny.
Them Duke boys.
I am 90.
Good news.
I'm 96% sure that this is correct.
The Boar's Nest is correct. Cakes is on the board. Yeah. Flared one to right field. You got
Finally.
Yourself a base hit.
Yes.
You got yourself a base hit, buddy.
Thank you.
All right. So let's do this. Let's take a break. Come back. We actually have some sad news to pass on. And we'll kind of toss that around here for the rest of the program. It is Cakes and Danny, Lord of the Zings, episode 4 of New Hope here on the weekend on 106.7 The Fan.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Welcome back, Cakes and Danny on 106.7 The Fan on a Sunday afternoon. Coming back with some somber news that just hit the net about 20 minutes ago. That Joe Bugel, longtime Redskins offensive line coach, former NFL head coach as well, after his time with the Skins, passed away at the age of 80. So that is just a bummer. A bummer way to end this program, because we're off at 3. But, yeah, it's just terrible news. Joe Bugel passes away at the age of 80. Just an icon here in D.C., the architect of the Hogs offensive lines during the Super Bowl runs. Just a huge name here in D.C.
Yeah, until the record was broken a couple times, but until that point, the NFL record for points in a season, 541, all the way back in 1983. Architect of, as you mentioned, the Hogs, which came from a training camp nickname in 1982 that Bugle bestowed upon a couple of the offensive linemen as part of that group of Jacoby and Grimm and May and Stark and Bostic and company, and you know, four different 1,000-yard rushers in that group, just paving the way for Riggo to, you know, Timmy Smith and everybody in between. An icon, man. A great coaching career as well, but just one of those guys that, you know, legendary status, right? I mean, you think about him for guys my age, it's kind of like, yeah, I never met Joe Bugle. I don't know what he was like off the field or anything, mm-hmm, but right. Just the sort of the deity-like status, part of Gibbs's inner circle, where, as far as I was concerned, the man walked on water, and that was what those era teams were known for, right? There were a lot of teams, the 49ers with Bill Walsh would, you know, it was Joe Montana slinging it to Rice and to Taylor and Roger Craig out of the backfield, and it was high flying and it was beautiful. And, you know, the Bears with their defense. Well, the Redskins were one thing, and it was the offensive line lining up against you at the time, by the way. Their average weight, 273 pounds.
I mean, that's an astoundingly low number. I mean, yeah. If you don't weigh 300 plus in modern day
high
NFL,
school.
you're not playing on the offensive line in the NFL in 2020. You're just not. Yeah.
And those guys just mowing people down. I mean, whether it was, you know, 70 chip or 50 gut or counter tray, you know, telling the opponents what was coming,
right,
and laughing at them. I mean, just that's what you think of.
They really had an offensive identity. You know, a lot of times over the last 20 plus years, you're like, what is this Redskins offense? Are they a passing offense? Are they a rushing offense? Are they a hybrid? No. With that era of football here in D.C., you knew what the Redskins were all about. And you could know that it was coming at you, but you were powerless to stop it because it was so well done. It was so technical. Bugle and Gibbs had those guys just operating at a completely different level, and you were basically powerless against it. You just couldn't stop it.
And it was that brilliant offense. And that's what it was. It was, to me, There have been several offensive innovators that have kind of given this league sort of a violent shove forward. I think Gibbs is one of those guys. Bill Walsh, obviously, who I've already mentioned, is one. And then there are others that, you know, sort of deserve to be shouted out throughout history. But basically it was take an infinite number of body punches, right? You're just getting hit in the gut time after time after
right.
time. And that's what that downhill running game was. That's what Riggo was, the Riggo drill. That's what, you know, you think of all the physical backs that have come through D.C. over all those times. And it was when you finally got tired of getting punched in the gut, there was the play action, there was your deep shot.
Right.
There was Gary Clark streaking down the field, there was Ricky Sanders in the Super Bowl. When you got finally so sick of getting hit in the stomach that you would cover it up, they would go over the top, and they knew just when to do it. And it was masterful.
That's where you really credit Gibbs and his staff. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Gibbs was schooled in the Eric Coryell, you know, the version of NFL football, air the ball out. But he knew that with his personnel and the talent that he had, he was going to win games by running the ball. So he wasn't one of these guys who was just like, I have to pass the ball all the time. That's what I was schooled in. That's what I know. He looked at his talent and said, well, this is a group that's going to mash another team into the ground, and that's the hand that I've been dealt. That's what we're going to run, and we're going to run it better than anybody else. And that's the hallmark of a really good coach, is where you adapt the talent that you have to whatever, you know, you think is the best way to utilize them. Gibbs did that, and obviously Bugle did that as well, because Gibbs brought Bugle back for the second go-round. He said, you're coming with me. We're getting the band back together.
That's right. And, you know, as a head coach, you know, Bugle was quickly, by the way, promoted to assistant head coach, right? He started off as the OC and then quickly promoted, I want to say either 82, 83, if memory serves. But he wasn't a particularly great head coach.
I mean,
that's not to knock him down. There's a lot of people that weren't particularly great. But I remember the incident in a game when, remember, the Arizona Cardinals were in the NFC East. People forget about that, but that was the thing. They were division rivals. And there was an incident where the Redskins were kicking the snot out of them. I can't remember the specifics, but a backup quarterback was in the game for the Redskins. I want to say Gibbs called a timeout, and then they called a pass when they were already up 30-some points. They're already just shellacking the Cardinals. I'm sure it was like Neil Lomax back there. And Bugle lost his mind and was livid at Joe Gibbs. And I'm going, oh, my God, friends, become enemies.
Right.
But, you know, amends were made, and they, you know, we're back together after that, of course. But,
so much Lomax and, like, Tim Rosenbaugh and just nondescript quarterbacks that went through the desert.
Right.
Yeah, but that's, you know, that shows you how stressful being a head coach is in the NFL. But, you know, give Bugle a lot of credit for, you know, the way he was really able to just build up that offensive line into, you know, a unit that still revered, still talked about. I mean, there aren't many offensive lines in history that, you know, have nicknames that get talked about and were as fearsome as that group was. So that, you know, that they're special. I mean, offensive lines are not usually pointed to and hyped up to the level of that group of talent that was here.
Without question.
In the 80s.
There have been, I would say, just a handful, to your point. I'm sure, like, historians would scoff at me for this. I think of two. I think of, honestly, the Redskins offensive line of the 80s and early 90s, right? That run from 82, basically to 92, where they had one losing season. And were just incredible. And then the Cowboys offensive line of the 90s that took over and paved the way for Emmitt Smith and the triplets. That group, you know, Nate Newton and company, one of the great offensive line ever assembled. And his, you know, people that are really knowledgeable about football could debate which one was better. I know what my bias is going to tell me. You know, I knew who I thought was better. But, wow, dude. Just thinking about that is it's sad. So this came up a couple weeks ago, Casey. Something that I always feel guilty about. And the guilt is when Wes Unseld passed.
Right.
We rightfully go through what Wes Unseld meant, and we sing praises. It's just it's a normal thing that we do, and we should do that. But it breaks my heart to think of, you know, everything from Bugle to Wes Unseld to, you know, other icons that have passed, and now with George Preston Marshall being gone, the renaming of the Redskins section to, you know, just thinking about not giving these guys the honor and respect and credit they deserve while they're still with us is something I always am panged with guilt about.
Yeah,
I know that's not how radio works, but I just wish, you know?
Yeah, it stinks that it's, you know, the accolades come in posthumously, you know, after they've passed. And, you know, with Wes, you know, that's a good example, is that there was so much in between the end of his playing days and then his passing. And a lot of that, unfortunately, was, you know, leading an NBA team that, you know, wasn't doing very well in the standings, being part of the front office that wasn't doing very well. It kind of dulls what he did as a player. I mean, he was a great player that a little bit of that was taken away by, you know, the coaching and the front office after he was done playing. You know what I mean? Like, you tend to not remember. And, you know, he's a little bit before my time. Like, when I started watching the Bullets, I mean, his heyday was, what, late 60s into the mid-early 70s. Mm-hmm. So it was – you kind of get lost in what he actually did while he was on the court. You know, like, you don't realize some of the accomplishments that Wes had until you see that bio. And sadly, it's when, you know, he's either sick or has passed. Yeah, I'm with you. We should – give these guys more of their due while they're still around. No doubt about that.
I mean, listen, and when you guys are doing, you know, show prep, and when Grant and I are doing show prep, it would be, it's one of those things that's this weird dichotomy, right? Where when you walk in, you go, you know what we should talk about today for no reason other than he was really great in, as you said, the early 70s especially, is Wes Unseld. That would be a strange thing if you tune in to listen to, like, the daily grind of, like, a sports talk radio show, you know? So I understand that's the medium and that's what happens. It's just, you know, you just sort of wish that those guys could always know how special they were to so many people. I mean, think about the amount of joy that Joe Bugle brought to hundreds of thousands of Redskins fans. Casey, I will never forget being at that parade in wintertime in 1988. Okay, you know, down on the mall, and the audio quality was just terrible. It was 2 degrees. wind was blowing. I'm sitting on my dad's shoulders, and you know he could barely stand up anymore because I was a little bit too big to do that, but it was still great. And
sure.
Nobody, you just hear it basically go, wah, 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 wah. Wah, 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 and then help hold up the trophy, and everyone would just go nuts, and we'd hug again.
Right.
Just the fact that he was part of that, you know?
Yeah, just, I mean, just
so iconic.
I mean, even much more recently, obviously, the Nats parade, the Caps parade. I mean, those are things, like, my daughter went down for at least, I know she was there for the Caps parade. Not sure if she made it for the Nats parade, but I know she's never going to forget being in downtown D.C. with, I don't know, 500,000 Caps fans.
Right.
I mean, the place was absurd. It was crazy. It was electric. And you just don't know if that's ever going to happen again. That's like with the Redskins, it had happened before. You know, it was still great when, you know, they did it multiple times. But with the Caps, it had never happened before. Like, you feel like you've got to be down there and be part of that. Same with the Nats. Nats win their first World Series. You feel like you got there's a connection to that. That you have to be there to really experience it. And I'm glad, you know, obviously that you got to experience that as a kid with the Redskins. I'm glad that my daughter got to experience it with the Caps. That's just a cool thing for kids to take through their lives and, you know, pass on to their kids and tell them about, hey, in 2018, I was in downtown D.C. with the Caps going through the streets with the Stanley Cup. And I'll never forget it. And like, just like you'll never forget, you know, freezing your butt off in downtown D.C. with a million people celebrating the Redskins' Super Bowl victory.
So they, when you know, Gibbs brings the band back together in 2004. I can't, that to me at that point was the most exciting sports development. Well, I'll tell you what, Jordan coming back to play for the Wizards again. None of these things, quote unquote, worked out. Right, but I'm just thinking of what, just in terms of what the news could have been.
Right,
right. We're taunted throughout the '90s and early 2000s. Were and also ran for a couple baseball teams. They put a team in Tampa because that's where George Steinbrenner's winter home was, which is ridiculous. We were going to get the San Diego Padres because they couldn't get a stadium deal done, and this was all about to happen, and then it didn't. DC was sort of used for leverage, so there was no baseball to write about. Derek Jeter had flown out to right field, and some little twerp kid reached over and they called it a home run when it was a flat in the Tony Tarasco's glove. So it was as glum as it possibly could be in the world of sports for years and years and years since the Redskins were good. The Caps were doing the Capitals bit where they're the better team and out skate and out shoot and they lose to Pittsburgh a million times. And it was awful. It was a terrible time. That news that Gibbs and company were coming back, I cannot remember being that excited. As a sports fan, and Bugle was coming back. He was going to bring back Don Bro. They were going to do it again, man. Enough of the suffering. I can't watch this garbage anymore. I'm not going to watch you guys muck this thing up. The burgundy and gold means too much to me. They're going to come back. Unbelievable. The first carry, the first game. I got tickets somehow. I still don't know how I got them. Row one, seat one. Clinton Portis.
Is that the last time you were at FedEx Field?
No. You know when the last time was? Last time was Jim Zorn's, I think his last home game.
Okay.
Against Dallas. And I was so miserable. I had paid so much money for those tickets. I bought them early in the season thinking, hey, you know, this the year two of Zorn, they started off great. They collapsed a little bit. They'll be pretty good. This game against Dallas will be really meaningful. So I didn't have the money, and I bought those tickets, and I regret it every second of every day. And I was so miserable, and it was so awful. That I said, I'm never going again.
My bad. Again. I completely railroaded your great Redskins memory with a bad one. You can go.
Oh, it's quite
you
right,
can go
dude.
Back. You can go back to Clinton Portis about to grab the ball, and did he go like 65 yards for a touchdown?
His first carry, he goes to the house, and I'm going, oh my god, this is it. This is it.
We're back.
Not only are we back, we're going to win every bleeping game.
And it was
we're
going to
shove it on people.
And
it was Gibbs.
Going back a few months before that, Jason and I were dispatched out to Redskins Park for Gibbs coming in for his press conference. And it was like, it looked like the Queen of England was going down the middle of the street in London. Like, there were so many people. It was like a conquering hero coming back is the best way to describe it. To have Gibbs coming back, to bring in Bugle, bring in guys from the glory years. Yeah, I'm with you, man. That was a real seemingly high point for the franchise in the mid-2000s to get Gibbs to come back and try to resurrect some of that former glory. Yeah, it was a huge deal, no doubt about it.
Oh, man. Well, rest in peace, Joe Bugle, the hog father, the boss hog, whatever you want to call him, man. Just an absolute legendary figure. I mean, again, it always felt like no matter what else he was doing, I know he was the head coach in Phoenix, and he was on those Raiders staffs, mm-hmm. I want to say.
He had a head coaching gig with the Raiders for a short stint, too.
He did?
I believe he did.
Was that pre or post
Art
Shell?
Yeah, in 97. He had a stint with the Raiders. They went 4-12, and as Al Davis likes to do, fired him after 1 year.
That seems crazy.
So, but again, like you said before, that will not diminish, obviously, his accomplishments here in D.C. Helped the Redskins to win 2 Super Bowls during their glory years. And, yeah, like you said, rest in peace to Joe Bugle. And prayers and thoughts go out to him and his family.
Man, it's the arc. I mean, I remember my dad talking about this when I was, I want to say, maybe I was like a teenager, just thinking about the way the timing would have worked, right? So I was born in 79. So it would have been kind of like early to mid-90s when the stars and legendary figures of his youth, you know, as is the cycle and circle of life, would kind of start to pass.
Right.
And it just, you know, it would hit him. And I'm like, do you know these guys? Did you ever meet any of these people? You know, like, you know, and it's just something about, because you're forced to confront your own age, your own journey,
sure,
your own sort of sense of things, where it's like, in my mind, Joe Bugle's still 50 years old with booty shorts on,
right,
you know, with a polo shirt tucked in, snug as all heck.
Yeah, he's right? Like sweating just on the sideline like Carlisle August 1st.
Getting down low as guys are doing a blocking drill and firing his hands up there like
right.
He's a sprinter getting off the block and yelling at people and smacking them on the butt. And you know, he's still still boss hog to me. He's 80 years old, you know? It's just, man, oh, man. But what a life. What a career. Thank you. Thank you, Joe Bugle, for the memories and for the unbelievable amount of joy you brought me and hundreds of thousands of Redskins fans, man.
Yeah, I mean, he was one of the premier offensive line coaches in NFL history. And, you know, that's the way he's going to be viewed. And like you said, he brought a lot of good memories and a lot of joy to a lot of people here in the D.C. area. And he'll be missed. So a little bit later, Danny, I expect you to pour some out for your man, Joe Bugle. And I will do the same. We'll respect Joe Bugle. In case you missed the news, passed at the age of 80. Longtime offensive line coach for the Redskins and also had a few NFL head coaching stints as well. Danny, we have run out of time on this Sunday afternoon. People can listen to you and Grant tomorrow right after the Junks on a Monday. You guys are on at 10. We will be on bright and early at 6. Thanks to everybody for listening. It's been Cakes and Danny right here on 106.7 The Fan.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.